We're going to call the meeting to order, and we have the important people here, so we'll get started. We're going to tell the Housing Finance Agency update today, and then we're also going to be hearing a report on the economic stimulus and how that's offering opportunities in this crisis and some ideas for the committee to talk about. So let's start with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and welcome to the committee, Mr.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman of the committee, I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. I have been asked to talk about two things today. A status report on the 501c3 bonds and GO bond appropriations that have been made to the Housing Finance Agency in recent years. Some initial reactions to the federal stimulus package, and then briefly about the economic impact of Minnesota Housing's investments, the report that was issued recently. You have two handouts about the status of the 501c3 and GO bonds. They look like this. And I'll just start with the GO bonds. Over the course of the last 6 years, just over $49 million in GO bond proceeds have been appropriated to the Housing Finance Agency. We have committed those funds to 11 developments. Because of some repayments, we were actually able to commit a little bit, almost $50 million. Of those 11 projects, 6 have been completed. 1 is under construction, and the remaining 4 are in underwriting, so still working on some of the legal processes. Those projects, as you can see, are all over the state and have together produced almost 500 units of permanent supportive housing or other housing. Last year, as part of the capital investment bill, the Housing Finance Agency proposed and the legislature adopted an idea of issue of providing the debt service for 501c3, or what we call nonprofit housing bonds, in lieu of GO bonds. We asked for this authority and appropriation because we had, over the course of a number of years, run into a number of difficulties in using GO bonds. As you know, GO bond proceeds have to be used for properties that are publicly owned. In many cases in housing, particularly with supportive housing, we're combining a number of uses of projects so that you would have some permanent supportive housing in an apartment building. So some of the projects would be publicly owned and some of it would be owned by a nonprofit or others. That, because of the Constitution, required us to do things like have separate elevators, special garage entrances, separate heating systems, because the feeling was that we needed to make sure that the public part of the building could stand and operate on its own. That obviously adds to the cost. It adds to actual construction costs. It adds to the legal costs. It adds time, and time is money when you're building housing. So we propose that instead that the Housing Finance Agency issue 501c3 bonds and that the legislature appropriate the debt service. This is what you did. We have debt service appropriated for $30 million worth of 501c3 bonds. We have committed over half of the money to 3 projects, and the remaining amount is not formally committed by our board, but has been set aside for a very large project in Minneapolis. So even though we haven't formally committed all the money, it is all spoken for. And again, this is money that was appropriated effective July 1st of 2008. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about the status of these two.
Mr. McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Orr, I'm just curious. The one in Minneapolis, you actually have a substantially lower per unit price, it looks like. Are the 196 beds, are they in a dormitory or something? Is that why the per bed cost is lower?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, that's exactly right. This is a very unique project that will combine a number of different functions. There will be some shelter space. There will be some, if the ideal goes through, there will be shelter space. There will be medical respite space. There will be transitional housing. There will be permanent supportive housing. And so the shelter space does not have individual units and individual bathrooms, and that reduces the cost significantly.
Just a follow-up on that. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that project?
Madam Chair, it is a project that will be located near the new Twin Stadium. It is in part to replace some existing shelter space, but then build on the... It will be a multi-story building, I think 6 or 7 floors. Not all of the funding is in place, so some of this is still in flux. It is an effort to provide some sort of seamless transition. So if you move from a you could move from a shelter into permanent supportive housing in the same location. We anticipate that it will be run by Kappa Charities, who runs the shelter that's being replaced, and it would be owned by Hennepin County, probably. Although it may be owned by Catholic Charities, we're still working that out. So there are some details that need to be worked out, and there's some more fundraising that needs to be done because the 501c3 bonds can't be used for all of the projects.
So it's going to be a combination of 501c3
and other funding.
Any deal bonds? Deal?
Madam Chair, not at this point, no.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Orr, I just wanted to, this is kind of more of an overarching question about the commitment that you have out there to build supportive housing. Do you have a commitment for the service side of those dollars along with the units that are being proposed?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, we do not fund projects that don't have at least an initial commitment of service dollars. So at this point, the answer is we do have at least a short-term commitment of service dollars for everything that we have funded to date. That will increasingly be a challenge, and we are concerned about the lack of service dollars impacting our ability to go forward on the capital project.
Madam Chair. Commissioner, so when you say short-term, is that a six-month commitment, a year, a two-year commitment? When you say short-term, what does that mean?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, in most cases, it's at least 2 years.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, if I could go back to the Minneapolis project. Commissioner Orr, is it been through pre-design? And because it's a 501c, is it outside the realm of, I know you're going to get into the stimulus, but would it be outside the possibilities of any stimulus possibilities, and is it pre-designed?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I have seen drawings, but because it's in flux, we've had conversations about instead of a seven-story building, maybe it'll only be 5 if they can't raise all the money. So it's I don't think it's far enough along to be in pre-design. The question about whether it would be eligible for any of the economic stimulus package, I think, is an interesting one. We're still trying to sort through a lot of that. There are, I think, some possibilities that we're hoping to explore with some of our other agencies. For instance, there's a lot of energy retrofit money. Maybe we could fund the windows out of another pot of money, or maybe we could do solar panels or geothermal, and that could be funded out of the money that goes to commerce. That's something that we're we've told one another we're going to talk this week about what the opportunities might be to take advantage of one another's funding.
Mr. McNamara?
Well, Madam Chair, this is probably consistent with our previous committee meeting that, Commissioner Orr, I'm glad you're being creative in your thought process, because that's what it's going to take to react quick, and you know, maybe you can get the gap done here of where you're short at. So I'm glad to hear you're looking at those kind of creative thought processes. Thank you.
Speaking of that, maybe I'll just pick up on that discussion, which is we did start in another committee talking about the issue that was in the bonding bill last year about asking the, or actually directing the agency to look at how these nonprofit bonds might be used in conjunction with the land trust. And then just, you said you were going to be checking with somebody on that. I don't know exactly where are we at with that now, and what can you tell me?
Madam Chair, we did this summer, let me just back up a little bit. The legislation asked us to look at foreclosure remediation and whether 501c3 bonds could be used in the context of foreclosure remediation. As you know, there is a group that's been meeting for well over 2 years, the Foreclosure Prevention Partners Council, that is a broad-based group that was working on putting together a financing plan. And it was our thought, since we were an active participant, that we could take advantage of the work that that group had done to work with them to identify the needs in terms of foreclosure neighborhood remediation, and then look at what funding sources there might be to meet those needs. What the focus has been primarily on single-family housing, and so in the summer we did ask for a legal opinion about creative ways to use 501c3 bonds in the context of single-family housing. So we looked at lease to own and things like that. The conclusion was that we can't use 501c3 bonds for those purposes because the property has to be owned by a nonprofit. Based on, we did then, after the conversation that we had last week, ask council for an opinion about the use of 501c3 bonds in the context of land trusts and as well as cooperatives. Well, I don't have a formal written opinion yet. As he was leaving for vacation, he said he believes that 501c3 bonds would work for the land trust.
Would
501c3 bonds would work for land trust, would not work for cooperatives. Now, one of the I want to reference that to the Foreclosure Prevention Partners Council. The conversations that have been occurring there around financing, there were a couple of things that were identified. Products for refinancing and interim construction financing. Neither one of those are appropriate uses of or legal uses of 501c3 bonds because that's private ownership. You have to have the property owned by a nonprofit. With respect to the land trust, we could use the money for if the debt service were appropriated for the 501c3 bonds for the purposes of land trust, the money could be used to purchase the land. You would still need to find the funding to purchase the building. And that is the bigger chunk of money. As we learned from GO bonds, it is sometimes complicated, can often be complicated when you're combining multiple sources of funding that have different purposes. So while it's not impossible, there is a big hurdle in terms of finding the money for the building as well as the money for the land with respect to the land trust.
Well, I like the part where you said it's not impossible. And I would just urge the agency to convene a group that was suggested, and I know that there is the foreclosure council that has been meeting, but you know, times are moving on, and I'm very, very concerned about whether or not we're going to miss an opportunity to do something with the federal stimulus dollars around the land trust issue. So maybe I'll just formally request that we get a group going on that, and because I have talked with some of the individuals involved, and I think there are creative ideas out there. that maybe just need to have some more, more time in the Bill. And I think there's, there's good leadership that y'all could provide, and I think also that the agency could, the community folks that are working on land trust. I'm just hoping that we can put something together, and it might be something that we haven't thought of yet. Is there any other bonding kind of proposals that the agency is thinking of going forward? I know where there's been some in the same community that's done a lot of, interest in having more 501c3 bonding opportunities, and I know that's not in the governor's budget, but have you talked about some opportunities at all with that?
Madam Chair, I think you just answered the question for me. It's not in the governor's budget. We've not gotten any requests or instructions regarding a bonding bill.
Well, one of the reasons I ask that is if the tenuous state or uncommitted state of the remaining bonds that are being worked there, if that's holding us back from looking at, because they may are they're kind of semi-committed or they're in the process, if that's holding us back from looking at things like the land trust or other kinds of bonding, I mean, I guess I'd like to say I think there's certainly been interest among in the community. I think maybe this committee too in seeing more opportunities for bonding because it's one of the more affordable ways we can go forward. And I think there is going to be there's going to be a bonding bill this year. And so,
Madam Chair, if I could just clarify and reiterate that this the remaining money that was appropriated last year is, in our mind, set aside, although not formally committed. And it is not holding up. We regard this as a done, and we're waiting for the other financing to come into play. And we have a timetable for that, and we have a plan. So we've been working very closely with the nonprofit and the local units of government around this project. We've been working on the project for well over a year. It is not holding up any additional requests for bonding. But as I said, the governor's office has not sent any instructions, asked for any input around the bonding bill.
I'll just share with you that I did have a conversation with the governor before the session started where he indicated he might have some interest in that, but we'll leave it at that. Governor Plenty and I have not had a chance to sit down and talk together. Maybe that's what we can try to do. Okay, unless there's any further questions on this, why don't we go on to the next part of your presentation?
Madam Chair, I handed out a summary of the economic stimulus package with respect to housing. And I just want to point out a couple of things. I'm hoping that this will be a useful reference tool for you. The Housing Finance Agency expects to receive some money from the HOME program, which will be used specifically is intended to be used to fill the gap on tax credit projects where tax credits were awarded in 2007, 2008, or 2009. We have, in the last 18 months, maybe even just a year, seen a dramatic decrease in the amount of money that a tax credit would bring in. We had been finding that for every dollar of a tax credit, we were getting about 90, 92, 95 cents on the dollar. That price has now dropped to sometimes as low as 62 cents on the dollar, which means we have a huge gap in our tax credit projects. We have about 17 projects that we've identified that are pretty far along that have like $85 million in gap largely because of this reduction in the price of tax credits. Congress was well aware of that issue, and that's why they appropriated $2 billion for this purpose. We will be receiving the allocation. Minnesota is unique among states in that we have sub-allocators, and so we will have discussions with the sub-allocators about the extent to which they will share in this federal money. The good news is these are projects that otherwise would be sitting on the shelf waiting to either find an investor or find the gap financing, which probably wasn't going to come very quickly. Now these projects can move forward in fairly short order. We expect to hit, there are lots of technical questions around this money. And we expect to get some more guidance from HUD, who hopefully is working with the Treasury, in the next couple of weeks. That's about all we know at this point. We do have like quite a long list of technical questions that we need to have addressed. The appropriation that the Housing Finance Agency will receive out of the list of housing funding. The bill also includes a new appropriation for the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. But unlike the money that was available in July, this NSP funding round will be available on a competitive basis and not on a formulaic basis. So we have already had a meeting with the jurisdictions that directly received NSP funds this fall to talk about whether it would make sense to have a joint application to HUD for that money and collaborate rather than compete against one another. We're waiting for the further instructions from HUD about the criteria so that we can assess whether a collaborative application would make the most sense. And if it does, Minnesota Housing has offered to facilitate that. If it doesn't look like it will make sense, then we probably will not compete with the local jurisdictions directly for that funding.
Are you going to answer another one?
I think
Representative Stevenson had a question. I'm not sure. I think it might have been back on the tax credit, was it?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Never mind. We'll just do that.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Orr. Maybe you could just kind of elaborate a little bit on the tax credit program itself. My understanding is that businesses can purchase these tax credits. Those tax credits go directly into the housing provision here, and they can use those tax credits to offset their tax liabilities. And so have we seen a decrease in the amount of businesses that have been purchasing that back tax credit, and that is why we are not getting the same amount of funding that we had in the past? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, part of what we've seen is that nationally about half as much money is available for investment in tax credits as we have seen in the past. Part of the reason is people's concern about investing in housing versus investing in something else. Part of it is the tax credits may be in less demand because there's less federal tax liability that you need to use the tax credits to offset. And part of it is just sort of what everybody's experienced with some uncomfortableness with the economy and whether you want to spend your money. So there are a number of reasons, but we have definitely seen less demand, and obviously demand affects price.
And just follow up, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Orr. So if a business has a tax liability for operating for that year, say $20,000, they decide that they want to purchase $10,000 worth of tax credits. Their total tax liability remains $20,000, but $10,000 of that goes into housing. In this particular case, would go into the housing market. They would still pay the $20,000, but they get that $10,000 break. Or is it a reduced amount of taxes they pay? Or can you tell me what would be the incentive for a business to purchase the tax credit?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, there are really two. One is that you get a credit against your tax liability. And the other is that in many cases, the housing produces income. You are investing in the housing. If you buy tax credits, the tax credits are allocated to a property and then sold to investors. So you're investing in the housing, and the housing will hopefully cash flow. And if you, at the end of the compliance period, decide to sell, you may make a profit on that as well. So it's a business investment, but it also is, it has a benefit because of your tax liability.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I have just one quick question about the gap financing on the tax credits. I've used them before, and I know they're very complicated. My question is the gap financing going to the housing agency or to the allocatees?
Sure. Madam Chair, the money is appropriated to the state housing tax credit agency. And then we will make grant awards to the project. And sub-allocators, assuming that we, some of the money is apportioned to the sub-allocators, they would do a similar thing.
I know there's a number of allocatees around the state, not very many.
Right.
What is their impact and how can they help in using their credits to help projects such as yours?
Madam Chair, we have a number of arrangements with the sub-allocators. Some of them we have joint powers agreements, and they have essentially returned the credits to us, and we then have awarded projects in their area, awarded the tax credits back to projects in their area. Others, such as Minneapolis and St. Paul, make their own awards. We all have a commitment to fully utilizing the tax credits, and Minnesota is one of the states that, because we fully allocate all of our tax credits, we always benefit from the national pool where tax credits are returned. So we have a fairly cooperative arrangement with the sub-allocators, and we do give priority to projects that they have allocated credits to but haven't been fully funded. And if we have credits, then that would be the first project in their jurisdiction that we would fund tax credits to try and fill in as much of the tax credit gap as we could. So we would we are waiting for further instructions about how to use this grant money. We would expect that the sub-allocators would follow similar procedures as we did. It has to be a competitive process, which was part of the qualified allocation plan. The federal legislation specifically talks about giving priority to projects that are ready to go. We can let bids in 120 days. So some of the criteria we have a general idea about. We'll work to use the money so that we can get as many of these projects as close to being ready to go as possible.
Any questions? Okay.
I did want to point out a couple of other things. There's a fairly large amount of money coming to public housing agencies that will not come through the Housing Finance Agency. That money is for rehabilitation of public housing buildings. It's, I think, about $50 million is expected in Minnesota. We know we have substantial rehabilitation needs in public housing, and while this will do a lot, it won't take care of all of the problems. We know that there are things like substantial numbers of windows that need to be replaced, and so we're starting to have discussions about what can we do to make sure that those windows are Minnesota-built windows, and maybe we can get some sort of bulk buying discount or something. This is sort of like in the initial talking stages, but we think that there are some real opportunities for not just to get the public housing refurbished, but also to take advantage of Minnesota businesses and help them along as well. There is also money for emergency shelter grants, which will be administered by the Department of Human Services and local jurisdictions, not by the Housing Finance Agency. Instructions are expected from HUD on that money by March 23rd. I do want to point out that the estimates that I've given you about the amounts of money are just estimates. It seems like every day we get a new number for how this money is divided up. It's probably, most of them are probably pretty close and in the general ballpark. There.
Before you go on, are you going to go on to another one?
I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay. Would you just describe a little bit more about the requirement to use HMIS data? What are they talking about there?
The federal legislation says that all of these dollars need to be tracked through HMIS, essentially.
Okay. So why is this number changing so much? Is it because there's not a clear
Madam Chair,
line item, or why are we?
Partly changing because it's formula based, and everybody has their own. Everybody's making their best guess about what the formula is, for instance, on the emergency shelter grant money, there's a question about HUD can establish a minimum grant amount, if depending upon where they establish the minimum grant amount, that will determine how much the state gets as a vote, as opposed to the local jurisdiction. So it's not, it's at this point, people are working off the best numbers that they have, but until the federal agency does their calculations, we won't know for certain.
And so in that case, you think about HUD? Well, Department of Human Services is administering at the local level. Is it coming through HUD or...
Madam Chair, all of the things that level? I identified in the appropriation sections are through HUD.
Okay. Can I just go back to the public housing fund? When you were talking about the Minnesota built windows and the opportunities there, another HUD program dealing with removing windows and exchanging windows because of the childhood lead poisoning issue. Is there a way to make those two work together with this? Are people looking at that?
Madam Chair, I'm not 100% certain, but I'm about 99% certain that the HUD, the public housing buildings are all lead-free because they have federal money.
Are you talking about the single-family homes that are... Public housing, you're talking about the high-rises, or are you talking about both? Or
Madam Chair, all of the public housing, because it receives federal money, it is required to address all lead hazards. So I don't think that the lead hazards, that there are lead hazards that exist in public housing of any kind.
You think it's all been addressed over the years?
I do, Madam Chair.
That's something we could find out for sure. I guess I'm not aware of that, and I would like to know that.
I can see, I mean, we don't have a single agency except for HUD that oversees all the public housing. There's a number of different public housing authorities all over the state, but I can, we can see if we can do a quick check.
Okay, that'd be good. Thank you.
I did not provide a summary of some of the energy provisions because those will be going... They're in a different article or title in the bill, but I have had very preliminary conversations with the Department of Commerce about trying to get together and talk about how we might be able to use the money for energy efficiency that is appropriated and available to commerce with the housing money. I think there are a number of opportunities, both in terms of rehabilitation, particularly with the foreclosure. We could maybe make the NFP money stretch further, perhaps with public housing to address some of the needs that won't be met with all of the money, as well as perhaps combining the federal money with our home improvement loan program and perhaps our rehab loan program. So there are a number of things that we'll be exploring over the next couple of weeks to see how we might coordinate our activities.
So I'm understanding, if I recall the president's discussion about this, I think the money shot's flowing or being available on March 3rd or 5th. Is that right?
Madam Chair, I think that that's one of the dates. There are lots of dates, and I don't honestly remember for certain on the energy whether that's the right date. On most of the housing money, there are requirements about when the money has to be spent, and it generally starts, it's like the time clock starts ticking from when the money becomes available. And for instance, on the NSP program, HUD has 75 days to issue instructions, and then there'll be another 75 days for applications to come in. So in some of the housing money, we don't expect the money would be available for several months.
Are you finished with your presentation? Okay, well then, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about number 7, Assisted Housing, Stability, Energy, and Green Retrofit. I think that's some of what you might have been referring to in terms of the working with the Energy Agency or working with the Department of Commerce. Is that...
Madam Chair, actually, that money is available through HUD, and it is only available for assisted housing, so it's Section 8, 811, 202 projects. And we will talk with... And that's available, the Office of Affordable Housing Preservation, I think, is the office within HUD that will be administering that, and they'll be deciding the terms and conditions for those loans and grants. And so once we have some further instructions, we'll be able to figure out whether some of the commerce money might be able to supplement that money.
And I'm sorry, is this only for HUD-sponsored low-income housing? Is that what... That's what you said here.
It's only available for Section 8, 202, 811 buildings.
Okay, well then, looking up at the Community Development Block Grant, how do you anticipate that being used?
That that will be administered by partially by deed and by the local units of government. The last estimate I heard was that deed is expecting that they will receive about $4 million. At least as of last Friday, their intention was to combine this money with their regular CDBG money and make awards. They have applications. They're in the process of reviewing applications now. So it will essentially be added to the pot, and they'll be able to fund a few more projects than they would have without this money. But, Madam Chair, the Housing Finance Agency doesn't administer this, so you've just about exhausted my knowledge of what their intention is.
Yeah, is that the same thing with the Native American Housing Block Grant?
Madam Chair, that money will be going partly by formula and partly by competition to tribes for administration, and we have no role to play in that.
Okay, and do you intend to address the other issues on page 4?
I wasn't going to, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Why don't you go through those? And actually, one of the things that I'm looking for is, well, foreclosure leadership on putting some of this stuff together with the foreclosure crisis. So maybe you could tell me how some of these might, really any of these might be related to that.
Well, Madam Chair, as I mentioned earlier, there is money specifically for neighborhood remediation, but that will be available on a competitive basis. As I also mentioned, I intend to have conversation with Commerce about whether, as part of the rehabilitation of homes that have been foreclosed or vacant and abandoned, whether we might be able to use some of the energy money to cover the energy efficiency parts of the rehabilitation and stretch the NSP dollars further. So to the extent that windows need to be replaced or a new furnace needs to happen or the insulation needs to occur, perhaps we can use the pot of money that Commerce has for those parts and use the NSP money for other sorts of rehabilitation activities. And we might be able to stretch that money considerably further if we can do that. I'm sure that I'm not alone in thinking that there are ways we can use the money that the Department of Commerce has. So we'll have a lot of discussion about that. There isn't, except for the NSP money and using that and using the Commerce money for energy-related activities, the money is not generally available for foreclosure. It's and a neighborhood remediation. It is available for other important uses. Now, the first-time homebuyer tax credit might be something that I would expect that people who are buying foreclosed homes would be able to take advantage of. You do have to be a first-time home buyer. There are income limits, and you have to buy the house this year, essentially. So there are some limitations on that. But that is an $8,000 for a single filer, and I can't remember $15,000 for a joint filer.
You know, I think. There might be an error then, because it says 4,000 for single filers. I think it is 8,000.
Oh, 4,000. I'm sorry, 4,000 for singles and 8,000 for.
I think I did hear that it was 8,000 for a single filer. Is that an error?
Yeah, okay, I don't know. It's possible that I.
Okay.
Okay. I believe it's 4,000 and 8,000.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's a possible tool for to be used in connection with the foreclosure efforts. I think actually, I don't think that there are a lot of other pots of money that are that will be used primarily on foreclosure issues. Most of the other money that I'm aware of is directed for fairly specific purposes.
Okay. Any other comments or questions from committee members? I'm just I guess I'm just a little frustrated. I wish we were able to put together some more packages dealing with foreclosure. Maybe we'll just have to have some conversations outside of committee to figure out how we can make some of those happen. And I would certainly invite the governor to be part of that. So unless there's any other comments or questions from committee members, thank you very much for your testimony today.
Madam Chair, there is also in your packet a report from the agency on the economic impact of our spending.
Okay, good. Go forward. I thought you were done.
I just wanted to sort of highlight a few things from this report. This is a report that the Housing Finance Agency employs a couple of graduate students from the Humphrey Institute every year. It's a project that we've been doing for a number of years. This year I asked the students to look at what is the economic impact of our spending. We tend to focus on who have we housed, how quickly we house them, for what sort of money. And that is the important main part of our mission. But there is there are other consequences from our spending, which is that we do put people to work. So based on a two-year funding cycle, we used a software product that many people use in looking at economic impact issues. And there are a couple of main messages I'd like to leave with you. One is that for every $1 million of housing finance agency spending on multifamily new construction, that supports 8.3 jobs in the construction industry, and then another two, almost three jobs in related industries, as well as another almost five jobs from activities that are economic activities that occur because of the wages and profits that are made from the initial spending. So for every $1 million of spending by Minnesota Housing, it supports about 14 jobs. And a lot of those jobs are in the construction industry, which is an industry that has seen significant declines in employment over the last 18 months. So we thought that it was important to remember that as well as housing people, we do also through the expenditures of agency money help people put people to work.
That does raise the question, have we actually tracked, or has the agency actually tracked the jobs in the past related to the various programs that have been created? Is that something?
Madam Chair, we have not. And this study does not break it down by program, but we were able to break it down by activity, new construction versus rehabilitation. But we do not keep track of how many of the jobs by program. And this is the first time in a long time that we've looked at this economic impact. It is my hope that we will continue to do that in the future. Now that we have sort of a start, we can continue to. I don't think actually that it will be possible to track all of the jobs. You know, we need to recognize that a number of the jobs are not, they're maybe full-time on the project that while it's being developed, but they're not at 12 months. and we're talking about FTEs in this report. I just think that as a practical matter, it's unlikely that we're going to be able to keep track on a project-by-project or even program-by-program basis.
So if I understand you, are these 14 jobs only FTEs? You're not counting any of the part-time?
They're the equivalent of 14 FTEs.
So it includes some of the part-time.
Yes.
Well, you know, committee members, just investing in other kinds of businesses and economic development interests in Minnesota, we actually do have a law that requires some tracking of the jobs that are created and the wages that are paid, and maybe it's something we should think about a little bit more as we, you know, and figure out how to help you have the infrastructure for that, because it seems like it, you know, the emphasis right now is on making sure that we create some good jobs and good paying jobs and green jobs and all that stuff that's going forward right now. So I really, this is a great beginning, and I thank you for that, and maybe we can do some more talking about how that might work. Okay, any other comments or questions? Okay, then. Thank you so much for your testimony. Oh, Representative McNamara.
Commissioner Orr, I think this is outside your purview, and maybe then the question's for the chair. Is the long-term homeless is under Department of Human Services? That's not, that's under our purview, and I was wondering, that's an area that has always been a priority of the governor, and it's got some cuts, but is that not under your agency? Is that under the Department of Human Services?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, in fact, the appropriated programs that serve the long-term homeless at the Housing Finance Agency are not proposed for cuts in the governor's budget. However, there is a flexible service fund that is funded through the Department of Human Services. And that program, my understanding is that it's not scheduled for a cut under the governor's proposal, but had received cuts in earlier budgets, and so is not at the level that it needs to be to sustain activities.
What is it, Madam Chair?
Well, Madam Chair, the sheet. Maybe I should just pass it to you, Commissioner, and you can see where I've highlighted it. Now that I've noticed, it's one of your sheets. And if the cut is $3 million from the one, I think it was some one-time money last time. My question is, Madam Chair, is there a chance that there's some federal stimulus money that potentially, I know we heard testimony yesterday in committee that actually in K-12 and higher ed, there's a requirement in the federal legislation that cuts can happen. They're automatically backfilled by the feds. Is there a possibility? That's a really important program, and I'm wondering, is there any federal stimulus potential for that? Seeing how you're on top of this federal stimulus so much, if Commissioner Orr is not the right person, I would like someone to look into that one.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, you're absolutely right, but this is a very critical program, and we have a lot of concerns about the funding level for that program and how it will impact our ability to develop housing in the future. It's really just building off the question that Representative Hayden had. With respect to the economic stimulus, I was in a meeting yesterday afternoon where a number of people from Human Services were talking about the economic stimulus, the money that would be coming to them, what the opportunities were. There isn't anything that jumps out at us at this point, but we are looking at how the various, particularly the Medicaid funding, how that will shake out and whether it would potentially result in some additional money that could be used for something like the Flexible Service Fund. But at this point, there isn't any money that is obvious that it could be used for that purpose, and we're just trying to figure out whether we can find some way.
What is that, McNamara?
An unrelated question, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you. Commissioner Orr, the first program, the home program, I noticed that we only have about one half of our population-based prorated share. And then in the fourth program, the Public Housing Capital Fund, we only have about two-thirds of our prorated population-based. Are those programs administered? Are we not a poor enough state, or what would be the criteria that we're getting shortchanged?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, on the home program, The formula is actually, it's not the tax credit formula, it's the home formula. And I can't actually tell you why we're under our per capita amount. It may have something to do with local jurisdictions, but I'm not positive about that. On the public housing capital, neither one of these programs, the short answer is neither one of these programs are needs-based. They're not like the Medicaid or the TANF money that looks at how poor a state are you and you get more money if you're poorer. That's not the situation here. Those programs are generally per capita or related to, in the public housing case, will be related to the number of public housing agencies we have and their capacity.
Well, Madam Chair and Commissioner Orr, and I think you're on top of this. My point is, we want to advocate for all of it, and I'm glad you're nodding your head yes. We deserve our fair share, and I'm glad you are advocating for it.
And Madam Chair, sure. Representative McNamara, we have, as I said, we've had discussions on the NSP money, which will be available on a competitive basis, about how the state can help facilitate an application so that we get as much money in the state as we possibly can. We also are considering whether it would be helpful to those small PHAs for the state to apply for the competitive funds under the public housing money. There's about a quarter of the money is available competitively. The big PHAs clearly can compete successfully. We have excellent large PHAs in the state, but perhaps the small PHAs can't, and if we could put together a collaborative application, we're happy to facilitate that.
Respond to your other earlier point about the service hours for the supportive housing service hours. Our committee will be weighing in on that, and I believe it's not in the governor's budget this year. And I think last year, I think over the biennium was $1 million, and a portion of that was a cut back. So it's one thing to, as I think you're pointing out, it's one thing to build the housing, supportive housing, but if you don't put the service dollars in, you can't live in them. So we have to, I think we should continue to take that on. We've often done pretty well in this committee on this side of the on the House side, but we've had some struggles with working with the Senate on that.
Well, Madam Chair, yeah. I think actually the cut is as much as $3 million total, because mm-hmm. there was some one-time money last time, and granted, mm-hmm. we're in some tough economic times. But it's been an initiative of the governor, this long-term homelessness, and I think that we need to remember that, and it is a priority. Thank you.
President McNamara, I'd like to name you our champion for that, and if we can go forward with that with the governor, it'd be terrific.
Two small parts and a big wheel.
Okay. Any other conversations on this issue with the commissioner? Okay, thank you so much. Next, I'd like to invite the Warren Hanson and Chip Hallback to come out and talk with us about the jobs and other parts of the housing as economic stimulus that they have been working on and sharing with us. I might remind committee members that tonight, too, is the, or maybe you'd like to talk a little bit more about this, the second meeting for the opportunity to have some more discussion about this. Tonight at 5:30, I believe, 5:30 to 7:30, right here at the Capitol this time. So if you could just include that in your information today, that would be great. So, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Warren Hanson. I'm the president of Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, and just by way of background, Greater Minnesota Housing Fund is a partner with the state of Minnesota, and specifically Minnesota Housing, on the financing of affordable housing. We get all of our resources, all of our dollars, from the Knight Foundation and Blandon Foundation, so it's all philanthropic foundation money, and we coordinate our funding through the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency's super RFP process. We consider ourselves a partner with Minnesota Housing and do fund projects along the entire continuum of affordable housing, everything from supportive housing to affordable rental, low-income housing tax credit projects, and home ownership. And of course now, the field has changed, and we have, along with Minnesota Housing and almost everybody else who has a social mission or even a private mission, we're working on foreclosure recovery. And all of our resources and our technical assistance are being directed at that in greater Minnesota. I'm here this morning along with Chip Halbach to speak to a study that Minnesota Housing Partnership, another partner organization of ours, commissioned from public finance economic consultant John Commerce, who is a principal at the Donjek firm. They produced this report. It's a report that is entitled Housing as a Lever for Economic Recovery. It addresses the same issue that was brought up earlier, which is the economic stimulus impact and potential of the construction of affordable housing, whether it's home ownership or single-family homes or rental housing or rehabilitation of foreclosed homes and revitalization of neighborhoods. I'm going to address my comments just to some of the highlights of this study, and then I think Chip will give some additional background. What I would draw your attention to, I'm not sure if you have this full report with you, but one of the things that the report did, and we're not, this is not to make a big deal out of this point, but it is an important factor, I think, at least we found it to be enlightening, and that is that the job impact of affordable housing is comparable and on a par with the job impact or economic stimulus impact of investments in transportation or other public facilities of various kinds. And that's addressed late in the report. It's not meant to put housing in a competitive situation, but just to help us all realize and be aware of what Commissioner Orr mentioned, which is that while we like to provide affordable homes for families, and that's historically been our whole purpose, we sometimes don't recognize. Of course, the builders' associations and other industry people do make a point of this, but we typically don't draw attention to the fact that job impact is there, and it very much definitely is. The other thing I would draw your attention to, and I love this fact, and I've testified about this before in previous years at the legislature, that there is a tremendous public revenue impact, positive public revenue return on investment that occurs when the state or local government, state and local government, invest in affordable housing. Specifically, the state itself will get back about 72% of its entire investment. To use the Challenge Fund as an example of its subsidy, within 5 years, because of payroll taxes and real estate taxes, and the deed tax and the mortgage registration tax, and things like that. So there's a revenue stream that occurs immediately when construction happens, payroll taxes and so forth. There's a revenue stream that occurs over time because of real estate taxes. And within that five-year window, the state gets that kind of return on its investment. So that's a very significant, I think, rationale for continuing that investment. Just makes good economic sense just in terms of the state's budget, not to mention the job creation impact. And, of course, there's significant economic spending impact. There's a handout here that addresses the impacts. And I should point out that this analysis that the handout has kind of departs a little bit from the study and attempts to go further and talks about the job creation impact of the Challenge Fund and the leverage impact of the Challenge Fund as a specific program. I think that with the job loss that we've had in Minnesota, Michael Noonan, who's the head of the Twin Cities Builders Association, spoke the other night about the fact that there are 27,000 home construction jobs that have been lost in Minnesota just in 2008, or probably in the last 12 months. And the other thing to keep in mind, something that was referenced before, is that with the construction of needed tax credit projects, rehabilitation of foreclosed homes and so forth, there's an awful lot of wood products window products and Minnesota made products that are put into the construction of affordable homes, and not to mention just the labor that's associated with new construction and rehabilitation. So finally, I guess my last comment is that this is a tremendously important area for us to invest in immediately. There's a button that you'll see around the Capitol that's been here all session called, it has a slogan on it, Fix Housing, Fix the Economy. And I think it goes beyond jobs, it goes beyond housing families, and it goes directly to stabilizing our neighborhoods and stabilizing our local communities. So I'll stop there and
thank you very much. Why don't we go ahead and hear your presentation, and we'll have questions for both of you.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first, to talk just a little bit about tonight's presentation.
And just introduce yourself, please, for the tape.
And I am Chip Halbach with Minnesota Housing Partnership. Thank you.
Thank you.
We and the Housing Caucus and others are hosting an education event tonight from 5:30 to 7:30 over pizza in room 217 of the Capitol. And it's a second in a series of these events. And this one is focused on what's happening to the ability of our public agencies, the state finance agency and local public finance agencies, in providing mortgage loans to families, first-time home buyers and others, in light of this economic turbulence that's going on. So we have one of the heads from Piper Jaffray, Dave Mullen, who will be there to present on that. And then also in terms of what's happening to lower-income first-time home buyers, Karen Gajewski, who's the vice president at Bremer Bank, will also be on hand to describe what's happening now in that industry. In addition, we will repeat some of the activities from the last meeting, where we have a speaker from Aon, the large nonprofit developer of affordable housing, talk about what goes into creating affordable housing in Minnesota, some of the rental projects using tax credits, and then also very brief presentations related to the work Twin Cities Habitat's doing, and also land trust and homelessness. So it's packed into that two-hour event, and again, it's intended to provide some background on how these issues that you're discussing before this committee play out across the state.
Okay, I really want to encourage everyone to go. The last session was excellent. Unfortunately, I know we have a scheduling conflict with some of us who have metro hearings on the budget, but I know this will be a very worthwhile event.
Oh, and I should say, our good friend in St. Paul, George Latimer, who is himself a housing expert, will be moderating the panel.
Great.
Then to continue with Warren's presentation, again, as with the handout you were provided, as Warren said, that really focuses in on the challenge fund. And there's a couple of reasons that we wanted to bring that to light, because first, it's a critically important housing production program used in the state. And it is used to treat the foreclosed vacant homes in Minnesota communities. It's also the major way that the state finance agency and local governments plug holes in these tax credit projects for the low-income housing tax credit projects that were discussed earlier, in that there's on average of about for the state funding, what we call the gap funding, which is used to plug the hole in the financial structure, about $25,000 per unit goes per housing unit goes in to round out the funding to create new tax credit programs. So it's very
important for resource for the programs that are key to expanding rental opportunities and also addressing vacant boarded foreclosed homes. And it also is something we want to bring to your attention because of all of the programs across the that are administered by the State Housing Agency. The Challenge Fund is the one that the governor is recommending the greatest cut from what was funded in the last 2 years, which included one-time dollars in base funding. So not only is it a very important program, but it's one that, at least in terms of the budget presentation to the legislature, is facing a 69% reduction from what was funded in the last 2 years. And then to the point of the study, and what we did was an extension to the John Commers report. It really is, among the agency programs, the biggest job producer, tax producer back to the to local and state government. So that's why we, among the programs that the state agency administers, that is the one that we believe should be a focus of attention when the legislature thinks about how investments in housing not only creates a needed resource in terms of housing units across Minnesota communities, but also through the Challenge Program, there's such a significant multiplier that the state makes here in the example we provide, a $25,000 investment into a $165,000 home. Now, when Warren talked about the tax return and the job return, it is so significant because of that high leverage, and also what we utilize the methodology developed by the National Association of Home Builders, which not only shows what happens in the first year or the year of construction, but what happens over 5 years of time. Therefore, it has a higher multiplier in terms of that tax return and job return than the immediate impact. And again, we have more information to back that up or substantiate that, but just the on the back side, you can see that for spending and also spending and the tax return are in wages created, that there's a direct return to the state, but then if you look at the multiplier based on the indirect and the long-term economic impact, amplifies that over time. So it's an evolving science, and as Warren mentioned, that we, you know, get with the request we made of John Commers and his research, we took it as far as we can in examining this and looking at what other states were producing to see that our numbers are consistent with that, and then also looked at it in terms of road construction, transit, and others, just to understand that housing, using these multipliers that are developed nationally, are very much in line with these other things that are thought of as job producers or economic stimulus producers in the state. And what I don't believe is that those national multipliers adequately take into account what we have here in Minnesota is a substantial industry related to wood products industry, lumber industry, and all of that. So I believe that it understates for Minnesota the economic value of investing in housing. And of course we have so many construction workers laid off too, so there's a ready pool of skilled, qualified labor that could be put back to work.
Thank you. Are there comments or questions? Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I did have, I guess it falls more into the comment area, but listening to the testimony of the previous testifier as well as these folks, looking at economic stimulus as we, you know, are trying to figure out how to use this money to move us forward. It's not just, you know, Minnesota windows, but there are other jobs that we don't always think about. It's not just the construction part, but for instance, there are three companies, manufacturers in Minnesota that manufacture solar panels, solar thermal panels, and another one, as I understand it, that's planning to get into the business. You know, and this is a whole other area that we hadn't maybe looked at before. So I think that when we, as we work forward, we want to make sure that we do say, you know, Minnesota businesses, because that's generating more jobs right there in another area that, you know, is something new. Ms. Hanson, do you have a comment?
Madam Chair, Representative, one thing I think that's just along those lines that's worth highlighting is the fact that over the past 24 months, Minnesota Housing has adopted a build all affordable housing green. Still, so that's for rental and single family homes, but rehab is kind of still in the works. It's being worked on right now as we speak. So, you know, affordable housing is possibly the greenest housing that's being built in Minnesota, as well as, you know, all the other good things.
Just along that line, one of the things we, yesterday was Disability Day at the Capitol, and one of the things that I committed myself to saying is every time we say affordable housing, we should probably also add the words accessible housing so that we make sure that we're talking about affordable, accessible housing. And I'm wondering, in other words, accessible to people who have disabilities. And I'm just wondering if we have any measurement of what that might contribute to the picture in terms of the construction costs and construction jobs that would be created.
Madam Chair, I haven't seen that broken out, but certainly the agency has requirements. Minnesota has requirements and percentages of all units need to be accessible. So that is when we speak of the multipliers and that associated with Minnesota housing program, it certainly includes accessible units too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I think it would just be helpful to see if we could get a handle on what those numbers are. You know, this it's such a compelling case. Let me just ask you, have you had a conversation from your either of your organizations, have you had a conversation with the governor about this and why in the world he would be cutting the challenge program, since, you know, the incredible impact on our economy right now is it's very well laid out here. This study is new. I mean, you didn't have the benefit of it before it was done. And so now that it is done, has there been the ability to have that kind of conversation?
There, Madam Chair, there are efforts, of course, underway on the part of NARL and all the various housing development organizations, nonprofits, and so forth around the state to communicate this message, the general good news, and so forth, and draw more attention to that, including with the administration. We haven't had a meeting with the governor's staff about it, however.
Mm-hmm. If I can just add to that, thank you, Madam Chair, that it's tough in terms, as we all know, we have a $5 billion deficit or a $7 billion deficit, and the agencies working with the governor were to look for cuts, and all of the programs of Minnesota Housing are valuable, and what Minnesota Housing used some, what I feel were very good criteria in terms of where they made their cuts in terms of people who were most vulnerable, so they didn't want to cut family homeless prevention, leveraging federal resources, so they didn't want to cut substantially the tariff program or the preservation program, and sort of on and on. But I don't feel that they adequately, you run out of money in terms of the budget recommendation, and I feel that at least we would bring the case to the legislature and the governor administration that there is tremendous leverage going on with the challenge fund. It's not to replace other things, but if the state is focusing some resources on job creation efforts, that this stands out as a very rank very high on the social good as well as the economic good through an investment.
Thank you. I think the economic case is strong. I mean, it's incredibly strong. I added up some of these numbers. You got over $500 million pumped back into the economy, both in the construction cost itself and in the wages paid to Minnesotans. Plus, as you mentioned, the actual housing that would be there. And within 5 years, it's all repaid. 72% is repaid. And I would guess if we added some of these other factors that Representative Saylor was mentioning too, some of the other industries, the companies that are dealing with retrofitting the solar paneling. I don't know if do we have insulation companies in Minnesota? Do we have some of the other? I know we're in the Green Jobs Task Force. They're talking about training home energy auditors, and there's certainly all the work to be done with cleaning up the housing that has lead poisoning in it. I mean, it just seems to me like we need. This is such an invaluable study, and if we can keep building it, maybe we can be successful. And I guess for myself, I just want to commit to trying to make sure the governor has a chance to talk with some of us more directly about this, because it just seems like such an, a good investment, such an important investment, and why wouldn't we do it? And why would we go the other way?
I think it's important to just understand, too, the limitations to the study. We did the best we could with the available information, and as you know, and utilized the work done by Minnesota Housing and the National Association of Home Builders. The material and information before you in terms of these great returns to the state are on the basis of new housing, or basically taking a shell of a house to bring it back to life. So you won't get those types of multipliers on other housing efforts like moderate rehab of housing. Also, we should point out that the long-term value in terms of jobs, taxes, return also is based on the information of the National Association and economic research of the National Association of Home Builders, and that has in its assumption that you have a new household move to a community, or you have a household who doesn't have to leave the community because lack of enough housing. So there, again, if you're just rehabbing the house of someone in the community, you don't get the type of returns we show here. But again, the returns are significant, and that's why we're bringing them before you. But the research itself is limited, and so we can say that there's more research to be done here. But the promised benefit to the state is tremendous, and we would hold it up to in comparison to the article in today's Star Tribune, where our friends from the Minnesota Vikings make their case in terms of jobs and tax return to the state, too. We believe that housing is a better value, but if the legislature wants to put these head-to-head, that we would be happy to participate.
I'm going to make sure we have a straight helmet on. Well, thank you. I think of other benefits, too. The savings that happens when we don't have people going into foreclosure. The savings that happen when we don't have people put in shelters because we're able to invest in housing and keep them. I mean, it just seems like this could be expanded even more, and it seems like you've been very reasonable in your estimates from what I can tell. So thank you for this work, and I hope it helps us go forward. We have minutes to approve members. Representative Lane, I'd like to move the adoption of the minutes from February 18th. Any discussion on those minutes? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion fails, and the minutes are approved and adopted. And again, just a reminder, tonight, 5:30, your chance to sit down with these fine folks that we just heard from again, and others that will be coming in and, hopefully build our
energy and our ability to deal with some of our foreclosure issues. It's at 217 at the state capitol, just right through the tunnel. And good food for $5, and really encourage everyone to attend. No further discussion. The meeting is adjourned.